Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, we are proud to welcome Les Wise, the Deliberate Musician. Les was one of the first guitar instructors at Musicians Institute in Hollywood, California, and he started his own international music school in Vienna, Austria. Les has also authored 6 books, including Jazz Improvisation for Guitar. Flow Guitar Enthusiasts is proudly sponsored by our good friends at Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flizzo to the Floro, and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm really excited about it. But first, Scott, you released 2 new videos, and I was in them.
Yeah, you were in them, which is not usual.
No.
Yeah, you interviewed Jim and Dana Crockett with Billy Sheehan.
And I just got my book this last week, too, so I just started thumbing through it. But it's a great book, the whole history of guitar player.
I did some more Wikipedia research on that guy, Billy Sheehan. Apparently, he was in a band called Talus, and then he was in the DLR band, David Lee Roth. So he was apparently a good bass player.
Yeah, he showed up, too. And a little aside, Crockett was really surprised that we all keep our Guitar Player magazines.
Yeah.
And Billy is an avid collector. He keeps all of them.
Yeah, I even put that clip in there with him, where he even said that he had all his old ones. So
yeah.
And then we also want to thank Proco Sound for sending us some great cables for using here in the studio for when we have people playing live. So we appreciate that. And then to go along with Jim and Dana Crockett, we also want to let everyone know about the 25% off of the Guitar Player magazine book at Hal Leonard. So you go to guitarplayer.halleonardbooks.com and you can use the ad code BBHL, so Boy Boy H Hal Leonard, and you get 25% off the cover price and free domestic shipping. Sorry, folks out in Alaska and Hawaii, apparently you have to pay.
Well, I recommend everybody get it. It's really a cool book. If you've ever followed Guitar Player, it's got some interesting stories and people, some of the guests talk about.
Yeah, I think the whole idea is that, you know, it talks about all the people that were in the cover. So, like, for instance, Billy Sheehan was on the cover, and so he wrote about his experience with that, and so did, like, people like Steve Vai, and I think Joe Satriani wrote the foreword. There's all kinds of people in there.
So I recommend you guys grab it, and we will be having him on the show in the near future, hopefully.
Who's that?
Jim Crockett.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I got excited. I thought we had somebody else.
Well, we're waiting for Billy Sheehan. When they get a little farther, I know you've been trying to get
Joe Satriani on it.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know where you got Satriani from Jim Crockett, but that's okay.
Well, he did the foreword of the book.
All right. Well, listen, we have a lot to cover tonight. This is going to be a great topic. We'll be right back after this, and then we'll be with Les and his wife, Linda, and we're going to talk about the Deliberate Musician.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the Flow and then check it out online at sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the flow.
Hola, amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching The Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
Hey, you know one thing we should mention? I've been getting all kinds of emails. Apparently, Sweetwater's doing 36 months right now.
36 months?
Yeah. So
that's very cool.
So I don't know how long that's going on for.
Yes, check that out. But yeah, this is the time to get something that you get. You can extend those payments. That's really good. Yep. But anyway, let's go ahead and start. First of all, I want to thank publicly Monique Caravello for introducing me to you and help me put this whole thing together. Thank you, Monique. She's listening out there right now. But anyway, this is a very interesting topic tonight because Les has this whole – I have the book, but there's a whole course, and basically it's called The Deliberate Musician. We're going to ask him real quick about that. He's here with his wife, Linda. But – let's before we get into that, let's go a little bit into your background because you've had a pretty interesting career, and you're as always, you're a guitar player. So I mean, that's that right there just totally validates everything in the universe. But anyway, give us a little bit of your background.
Well, first, Jeff and Scott, thank you very much for having us on, and it's exciting times. So basically, I was raised in New Orleans. My sister's actually an opera singer that sings in the New Orleans Symphony. Oh. And I grew up playing music in New Orleans when I was really young and started playing on Bourbon Street when I was about 15. And so it's, so I started really early, like clarinet when I was in fourth grade. And so what happened is another jazz guitar player, actually Ron Eshday and I, we met when we were like 17. On Bourbon Street, we were playing together in different groups, and so I came out to California, but before that, I played in a lot of bands and toured the Midwest and all over. And then Ronnie told me that Howard Roberts and Jody Orio and all these people wanted to start this school in Hollywood called the Guitar Institute, and I went, well, that would be interesting. So I came out and. The school started first, and then I joined them, and we had about 30 people in a room. And by 1989, we had 1,500 musicians, and 1,200 every year were guitar players. And so it was,
wow.
It started with the little 20 guitar players, and then it grew, and then everybody. Pretty soon, before we knew it, we had taught Steve Trovato and Paul Gilbert and Jennifer Batten and Norman Brown. He has like 5 Grammys and Scott Henderson and Frank Gambale. It just went on and on. And so there's so many that it's just crazy. Probably 30% of all of the guitar players that are even at GIT now, the teachers, they all just stayed there. So it was incredible. It was like an epicenter for guitar. We just
yeah,
lived
it's a
it.
Big community. I mean, they yeah. pretty much stick together. And at the time where you were doing this, I was over at SC with
Duke.
But he had mentioned about he had talked a lot about Howard Roberts, the whole school and the program. He really liked it.
I just looked up on Wikipedia. Apparently, Paul Gilbert was in a band with Billy Sheehan.
Yeah, he was in a band. They were together.
I'm being serious. I'm just kidding around. Yeah.
But, and at that time it was called Guitar Institute. But I remember it just exploded. I mean, literally, we just heard about it. Everybody was going there. And it was a good idea, and it's now it's musicians, and it covers everything, almost every instrument.
Yeah, and Monique, she was a student there too.
Yes.
And she'll have to come in when she comes in and tell her very unique story of how she became part of that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to let her. You have to ask her because I'm telling you, you would be even surprised. But she is a gladiator. So
yeah,
I don't know if you guys ever saw. There's a picture of Monique with Steve Vai. from when she was in that school, and it's the best picture of Steve Vai because for some reason he decided to show up in a Bill Cosby sweater.
Wow.
It's hilarious. Like, just picture
Bill. I have to ask her about that.
She posted on her Facebook. It's like, it's the funniest thing ever because, I mean, of course, she looks like she's out of the 80s, and then there's Steve Vai with a Bill Cosby sweater. Looking like Steve Vai. It's like, what is that?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's funny.
Now, let's go out of the country for a minute, and let's talk a little bit about this international school, music school that you developed in Vienna. What was it? How was it different than Guitar Institute, or was it similar? And what was the whole thing behind it?
Well, I think first what happened is that GIT had become so big, and by 1989 it was just like gigantic. Mm-hmm. And so Linda and I, what happened was, is around 1985 or 6, GIT started getting a lot of students that were from Europe and from Japan too, but a lot from Europe. And the students would go, God, I wish we had a school in Europe like this. But and I said, but he said a lot of the people, they have money, but they're not going to take their kids out of school and come all the way to and live in Hollywood. Right. You can appreciate
well,
that,
Scott. Well, a lot
Scott.
Of their friends couldn't afford it.
They
so
couldn't
they wanted,
afford it.
They wanted less to come and do seminars in their country. So that's how we started mm-hmm. doing seminars. And it really just took off. And then they said, we want you to stay and build a music school here.
So the format of the curriculum was similar in structure.
Well, we rewrote our own curriculum, but it was similar in the sense we started with a guitar school and a bass school. And, you know, and I brought people over, like in the rock department, I took Paul Hansen. Mm-hmm. You know, from GIT, I took him over, and he was a teacher there. And we just built
the... Because one of the things that always intrigued me about Guitar Institute...
Yeah.
It was pretty innovative at the time in terms of how they were teaching, which I think kind of it follows through with your new deliberate musician program that you have online. Because, you know, at SC, we had classes. We'd have to go to the library to listen to stuff or whatever. But basically, we had classes and then performance with interaction with our teacher and stuff. And when my friend, another good friend of mine who's listening out there, Jeff Mueller, who went to Guitar Institute, he was telling me that you would go in, there were classes, there were special like master classes where somebody would come in and perform and talk, but you had these tapes. And you would go into the lab, and there were exercises and stuff that you would listen to the tapes and do what you had to do. And that hadn't been done before, at least as far as I know. I've never heard of that. But so basically, you could do it on your own time. You could go in at any time to the library and go through your lesson plans.
Well, you know, and you're absolutely correct with that, is we had the tapes, and then what happened about 1985 or 6, they decided that it would be even better if we took every core class and Don Mock and the other people there and we videotaped the teachers. And then a student can come and not even go to the class, but at mm-hmm. 3 o'clock in the morning, he could watch us teach. So they took it to the next level, right? I mean, that was the thing that was that made it even more innovative. It was
because there was a lot of just students, but there were gigging musicians, I remember yeah. there. Mm-hmm. So they could work around their schedules and still do their work and then be able to. That's totally innovative in the tent. That was never done before. I don't even think.
Yeah, it was an incredible place for that. Yeah, you were totally free and you didn't have, like you said, with the university, you also have structured things and all. And
Well, real quick, what guidelines did you get from like Howard Roberts, or did you get anything on the curriculum? What did he tell you he wanted to do?
Well, what happened is this: we all sat down together, but Howard had been teaching these seminars all over the world, and so he had this core curriculum of learning how to play certain things and read some music, but be able to really play and all these different techniques. So we started that as kind of the basis or the core, and then each teacher and each thing, we just kept adding to it. So it's like we had guidelines in the beginning. It wasn't just like free. We went in, but we went and we created stuff, and we had people that could, could do calligraphy and write the curriculum. And so we built this base, you know. So, of course, when you go to a university, you know, supposedly all of it's there, you know, in the library. But we started with like an empty library, and then we built it up from there. Mm-hmm. And all of the people participated. But I can tell you, with Howard Roberts and Ron Eshday and Joe DiOrio and Don Mock, it was, and then later as each student graduated, like Steve Trovato and them were in 1979. So as each of them graduated, one or two would stay and become teachers.
Paul like Gilbert.
Scott. Yeah, Paul Gilbert, Scott Henderson. So that became a brain trust. And so what happens was, is we would have where we're teaching and guiding the students, and then like every week, you know, in the teacher's lounge, maybe then there was only six or eight teachers or ten, they go, God, I wrote this last night, check it out. And they go, God, that's a great concept. And so it was a gigantic brain trust, and everybody shared everything, so we multiplied really fast.
That's very cool, and I don't think anybody still has done that well.
Is
true. So then after the international school, and then now you went totally online, and you basically made it global. I mean, it basically gives you that immediacy. Let's talk a little bit about the structure of the website and the classes. You have videos, and then you also have a one-on-one type Skype. Of thing via Skype.
Where we Skype and coach people. But maybe I should go back just one step farther to say why we came to the Deliberate Musician.
Okay.
And it probably grew out of, and Linda can share this with our school in Europe and also with GIT, is that for all the students that made it from GIT and the ones that play really great, and you've heard of all of them, you've seen them, there were other students there, some as good or better than them, and they never made it. And it wasn't like made it like Hollywood, the big record, because you know that's all a myth anyway. But what it was is that it was the mindset. And I started noticing this when we came back from Europe. I'd see my friends, they go, oh, Les, you're back from Europe. What's going on? And they would be performing, or one of the students. And, of course, now they've been out of GIT for 15 years. And I go, God, you sound really great, like they just finished a set. So instead of saying thank you, I would get this, oh, no, the strings are no good. And so they would spend 10 minutes trying to talk me out of
how good they were.
So I said, Linda, you know, there's something with this where they can't even accept a compliment. You know, and so one thing we teach somebody in the seminars we do is to just say thank you. So what I'm saying is we started to study, and over the years we found out it was that mental thing that I can't, you know. And what we did, we looked to sports psychology. And all the athletes that are making hundreds of millions, in about 30 minutes after they miss that shot and it doesn't go in the basket, there's somebody there. Okay, what's going on? Look with Shaquille O'Neal. Remember where he had the... So it's that kind of thing. So that's how it started, that if we could get the mental picture of it. And it's interesting with Steve Vai, because about 3 years ago, he did a YouTube video, and he starts talking about somebody asking him about being, you know, how do you, the monster musician and stuff. And he said, you know, after a while, all of us know how to play, but it's the mind that separates the difference. And so I tried to think of a name for that, and I knew that musicians... that really had a mindset or had nothing blocking them from moving forward would. So that's why we called it the Deliberate Musician. But the last point I want to say with this is with Paul Gilbert. When Paul Gilbert was a student at the school, we were coming back from lunch one day in a news network, a big, like, NBC came to film The Rock School in Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
And they had and of course, the cameras were gigantic. There was as big as a refrigerator, you know. And so Paul Gilbert and I are coming back from lunch. And this woman who was like, she probably had interviewed dictators of countries, right? And they sent her on this 5 days at the rock school. And they were asking everybody, why do you want to be a rock musician? You know, and everybody, of course, with the hair and everything, they go, well, I'm studying hard and all the licks. And they're going through all this stuff. So finally, Paul was over there. And so she said, well, let me ask him. So they stuck a microphone in his face. The camera rolls in. And they said, why do you want to be a rock star? And in 10,000ths of a second, and never said another word, he goes, why not? And so we've talked about it, but years later what happened was there was nothing impede, not that he knew he'd ever become famous, but why do you want to be a rock star? And he goes, why not? So we also teach things where when a student goes to their parents and go, why do you want to play guitar or go to college or whatever? You go, why not? And it's that shift. So that's really the deliberate musician. Why not?
I've seen Paul Gilbert many times in concert.
Yeah.
Amazing.
He's great.
Yeah. Saw him at NAMM like 2 years ago, and I realized that I will never be at his level. That guy is like 10 feet taller
than me.
See,
that's the wrong thing. You're already defeating yourself.
Yeah. I'm making a joke because I did not, even as many times as I've seen him, I never knew he was as tall as he is. That guy is ridiculously tall. Like, but anyways, so what do you do for musicians? How do you teach them to deal with negativity? Like someone just, you know, because we've all played bars and you have the drunk guy come up and you suck, you sound nothing like, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd or whatever.
Leonard Skynyrd.
I don't know, whatever, but you know, well, I'm from Decatur, so that's what we play. But you know, how do you deal with that? Because that always happens.
Well, I think in the beginning what happens is musicians, not all musicians, but they get caught into this self-talk. Because really, in the end, first thing, what do musicians do? How do you become a great player? And I'm not talking about playing in bands. The way we become good players, and that's why even friends of mine, musicians that are really good with computers, is because you learn a guitar in a room by yourself. Okay? And so that's the place you cherish. You know, when you get in your studio and you go, wow, I'm here alone, you go, oh, it's 11 o'clock, I'll have till 6 in the morning. And then you cherish that. Well, guess what? You're in the room with you. And so when you play, I'm no good. Oh, I can't play. I can't do this. So for all athletes, everybody, if I keep going, we can't win the Super Bowl. We can't do this. I'll never catch that pass. And so what happens is we get caught in this dialogue, and it's a loop. And that looper. And so what we have to do is change that narrative. Because like with the Paul Gilbert thing, it isn't that he said he was great. He just had nothing impeding himself. So he's not every day, but going, I can't play. I'll never be as good as Paul Gilbert. Well, why not? You see?
Yeah.
So that's the...
Well, it's interesting, too, when you're younger, you're more naive.
Yeah.
So I found that I would break rules and just do stuff, and those were the most creative times. As you get older and you see other structure and stuff like that, it inhibits you. It actually does kind of confine you because... Like example, I mean, in school I studied music theory, and I had to unlearn, after I learned music theory, all the structure, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. After that, it took me years to unlearn that so that I would try things again. Because I was like, the way they teach it, or they taught at the time, you know, this is a more traditional, this has nothing to do with Duke's guitar, because I was from Duke's class, but he was very much into experimenting and stuff. But the traditional stuff at that time at USC, and it's different now, is it was like, you know, okay, we're going to write like Mozart. Mozart said you can't use these type of chords, you can't do this and you can't do that. So it's all this like don't do negative type of thing, like don't do that.
right.
You know, and it took a while to, but when we were younger, I mean, I remember the first thing I wrote in music theory, and I had like major seventh chords. It sounded great. I got an F. It's like, this is nothing like 17th century. I go, but my answer to him was, but it sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds like jazz. Yeah. Major seventh. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, no, it sounded more pop. But
Well, you know, and you're absolutely right with that, because if you see now with YouTube where we can be exposed to people that are very young and see their talent, right? And you're on the, you go, God, this guy's 12 years old. He's playing the blues. Is it because they are at that thing where they're not letting all this input slow them down? You know, it was, and look at Mozart, he was the party animal in Vienna anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And
he was one of the first rock stars.
Yeah,
really,
he was. So yeah, no, it's a you do have to unlearn things. But so that's what we do, is first get musicians to start hearing their inner voice, and then after that, now they can make that corrections. Well, maybe I can. Maybe I can do this. So what happens when students, some students get so frustrated with their friends and people, let's say Decatur or New Orleans or Albuquerque, where my wife's from, you're in this town and your friends are beating you down. Oh, you'll never play. So you go to a school like GIT or USC or wherever. Well, now we have the... what I call like the lynch mob mentality. You know how when one person wouldn't do anything, but if you get the collective consciousness of everybody. So now you go to a school, USC, someplace, and your teacher are two teachers or three. You go, I can't do this. I can't play. And you can at the moment. You do it again. A month later, you can't do it. But the teacher goes, you're going to get it. And that, but the teacher believes in you, but you don't believe in yourself. And then one day, a little crack, well, I'm starting to get it, and then it starts to come. Is it because their belief was so great that eventually you get out of your own way just enough? And so then you would say to yourself, well, how did the teacher know? Because the teacher, and you know this through the recycling, whether it's GIT or any college, you know what the guy played like when he showed up at the school. And 5 years later when he teaches, and they go, he's a monster, but you knew when he couldn't play at all. So you see, it's all that collective energy, and we just start believing and believing, and so that's all part of that synergy. And that's what schools do. So people go away to school, they come back and go, God, I went to GIT, I'm a monster. Now, is it because everybody believed? First, you saw people who couldn't play, and then you saw 6 months later that something was happening. And so, yeah, it's all here anyway.
Yeah.
You make a shift, and that's, you
well,
know.
You mentioned in the book that, you know, take it, we have to deprogram, so to speak, our negativity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you said one of the examples is when you listen to somebody, and I'm still like that. I have to unlearn that. It's like you're critical.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that guy just, you know. And sometimes, like, if I'm hearing something, like, if I could, because also working in the studio where you have to be very precise,
yeah.
When I hear something out of tune, it just drives me up the wall. It's like,
oh, yeah.
You know, nails on the eraser board, you know, the chalkboard. It's almost that bad. But I have to, you're right, you have to tune that out. So, like, I was at a concert the other day, and I saw this guy, and he's very, very good, very good showman. He had some flubs, but I tried to do that, like, yeah. Turn that off. Like, no, he's killer. It works. You know, there might be a bum note here and there, but it's okay. But a lot of musicians I know, in high school, we'd watch a band, oh, man, he missed that. Oh, man, you know, we would just, like, tear them apart, mm-hmm. You know.
Well, and I think two things happen with this, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that, number one, musicians, when they get together, where, you know, people are first, because of the insecurities, because it's art we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's not where you study that I'm going to be in an accountant in which I can balance both of the columns to zero, I'm on my way. But instead, some things don't come. So they tend to get critical, musicians together. But the other thing, where we teach people in performance, where, you know, you're on stage and you're playing, and, you know, a person's trying to let go and get that freedom and then the magic and they flow, right? But instead, they're on stage, God, oh, shit, I suck. Oh, wait, that great part's coming up, or whatever it is. And they're so terrified, it's coming. So what happens was, what happened for us is that when we looked at it really close, we started to discover that there was actually two parts to performing, and we actually learned this from other arts, like dancing and other kinds of performance, is that the reason musicians are critical is that in the practice room by yourself, you train that muscle, because if you weren't critical, if you weren't your own self-coach, if you weren't the Marine DI on Paris Island training a group of soldiers, so we need this. We need somebody to be self-critical ourselves, watch us play and go, no, wait, that tempo isn't right. But when you get on stage, what we're never taught to do is to turn that off. So
right.
We have systems where we teach musicians in the practice room to turn off the analytical part, but to acknowledge it, that it's still good. So you should have that detail. That's the great thing about musicians. Every detail, oh, the frets, oh, wait, the tuning's off. Wait, there's a lot of slack in this.
Yeah.
You know, and you go, God, the pickup's rattling. Is there something? You know, it's the crazy stuff, but so it's the part where we have the analytical part, which we should use, and then we could actually train and practice to let go of that and not do that. But most musicians keep this one, and then when they get to performance, oh my God, I'm so upset. Or you have the others that don't even They don't practice. You know, I mean, they practice, but it's only performing. And so, you know, I mean, how do you compare the difference between like Steve Vai or some incredible with all this stuff, and now you have Tommy Emmanuel. Well, he walks on stage with the acoustic guitar, and he moves a legion of followers.
Well, that's, you know? I mean, that's really important, because I know when I've done live gigs and I had a setup, I was always involved technically with it and also recording it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about recording and the amps, and I got to switch this guitar, and I got to do this, and the other musicians. It's almost paralyzing sometimes. I mean, you have to really... Sometimes I wasn't successful as detaching myself and actually turning it off. I know now in my older age and wisdom to delegate more of that, because you got to focus on the performance. And even Duke used to tell me that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. You got to focus. You know, there's a certain point where you just play. And I think you guys talk about that too, in a sense, you that part of letting go in the process that you talk about. You have to just let go and just go with it. You know, just let your it's hard to describe it. I'm trying to remember what you actually said in the book, but you basically after you do all these exercises and stuff, you just let go. You've already reprogrammed, you've taken the negativity out, you have the goals, you have all the stuff set up, and you now just let it go and go and let it happen.
Yeah.
Now, bringing that up, let's talk a little bit, because one of the biggest things that you mentioned in the book, which I think is really important, is the, like you said, this negativity that we develop, and a lot of that's it's the subconscious. So I want to talk a little bit real quick about the mind and the subconscious mind, the differences, and a little bit on how to reprogram that. I know that's a whole course in that, but but just kind of take it from there.
Well, the thing is that in the subconscious mind, and there's many names for it, but basically what's happening is, of course, it's like a gigantic tape recorder. And, of course, it has a defense system for it. That means if somebody tells you, like, let's say Steve Vai finishes a solo and a guy runs up, God, you sound terrible, he's not going to take it to heart. But if every musician that he played with for the next 30, 40, 50 days kept saying it, you know, it would stick in there. So, but what happens once something sticks in there, it's there until we correct it or look at it and take it a closer look. So the first thing that, whether it's an athlete or anybody, you look in, and first you have to identify where these things are. So what you have to do is, what are musicians good at? Listening. So what happens, we first start to listen to the self-talk. So when we train musicians, what we do is we go, look, say like I'm at SC, right? And so we say, look, you can listen to yourself, but first, just hang out with your friends and listen to what they say. And because musicians are so good, what did he say? What's going on? So that's how you start to identify what's in there. And then once you do it, you look at it and say, is this really reality? Let's say his right hand is terrible, or he flubs the notes. Well, all these are correctable. We just look at it. So then once you identify that negative self-belief, then... what we do now is just reverse it and say the opposite of it, but you just have to say it over time, and that time is 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. So it takes time to reprogram it. So what happens, you identify it first, what you're saying to yourself, and you just start letting go. A lot of times it's good just not to say anything. You know, like if a guy goes, well, I can't play, I'm no good. Look, why don't you do this? When I say I enjoyed what you said, just say thank you. And when we do seminars, Linda, and we'll do a seminar, and we'll go, just say thank you. So they try it on each other. You sound great, and they go, thank you, and the person do this, thank you. And for 45 seconds, it's horror, because they don't know how to just accept this. Yeah. So Linda, at the school, when you would have students come up and say they were afraid in performances, what did you recommend to them?
Well, the same thing that, you know, everything somebody says to you, you're giving it a meaning. And sometimes you don't have to give it a meaning. You know, you don't have to take it to heart. You just have to know deep down what you're doing and where you're going, and forget about all those other people. And that's...
Yeah, absolutely. So the way in which you do it is just like as you noticed in the book, whether it's teaching guitar or playing or whatever, now we start saying, well, you know, there's other ways you could say things. Like, what if you said this? I can't get this. We go, okay, that's fine. And you go, I can't get this. And Scott goes, I'm working on this. I still can't get it. What if I said, you can't get that yet?
Right.
And you add that one word. And so Scott goes, oh, Les and Linda were on. It was pretty cool. And then he says, yet. But maybe for 2 weeks he does. And then he goes, well, I can't yet. And now there's a little shift in that. So first you identify. Then number two is we have statements that people in there may have never said. You know, it's like, I want to improve my rhythm, but so I want to play better rhythm. What does that mean? But in the book, it might say, I want to play flowing rhythms. I want it to be easy when right. I play. So basically, it's simply identifying that thing that really isn't true, and then you just turn it. But it's a constant repeating and stopping it. You say right. something, you stop. You say something, you stop, and eventually it changes. It's just a...
Well, one of the things I found in dealing with younger kids and meeting younger kids, yeah. whether it's music or anything else, is I have to watch myself from my upbringing. We were taught in a negative way, if I can say it that way, yeah. don't do this. Yeah. That's wrong. Yeah. You know, you do that, that's wrong, or, you know, that's terrible. You know, or when you do something good... You know, it's like, yeah, that was okay. You know, I got an A on my paper. Well, that's good, but just make sure that you keep studying. You know what I mean? That's a negative way of putting it. And we were brought up, that's a cultural thing. I'm not blasting my parents or whoever else. But what I find myself trying to do now is like if somebody, like a child or something, or even another friend that's playing guitar, and he's doing something, he's having really a difficult time, rather than say, don't do that, or that just doesn't work, or that sounds terrible, I try to turn it around and say, well, try this or do that.
Yeah.
So flipping it. And I think that is, I think that's kind of what you're saying is you got to be able to make it into a positive. And anything that anything that's put to you in a negative way, like you suck, you know, yeah. or whatever it is,
yeah.
can be flipped around. And I notice that, especially with younger kids or younger players. Because all through my years, there were always friends of mine that I knew that came up and asked me about guitars or effects. You always have to keep that in mind because you can really mess them up if you know, that negativity and that programming. I think a lot of times in our past, that was, you know, part of our society. And actually, it is. We're very judgmental. We watch TV. We watch reality shows. We watch stuff. And basically, we criticize, you know, like my grandmother loves soap operas. And those there people are always getting in trouble. And basically, people would talk and gossip about, well, you know, they're having an affair with so. And it was basically criticizing me. It was like entertainment, but the mechanism's still there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, as artists, we're in art. And so in art, we need to guard against that in this case, what we need positive statements. And, you know, most people, musicians that learn how to play, right? Like you mentioned Duke, right? And Scott, maybe with you, you had a teacher or somebody, and it wasn't just they helped you played, but they were positive and they believed in you. And to this day, you'll go, okay, name the 20 teachers that were terrible. Maybe one, but go, who's that one? You go, I had this one, and they were my hero. You know, right. you have that one, and we always remember that. And sometimes you'll call them on the phone and go, what's going on? Just to hear their voice to be lifted. And so, yeah, that's the...
Well, Duke was, he was very much into
like
positive
that?
Feedback.
Yeah. yeah.
So, like, with his beginning classes, when he first started with the beginning guitar classes, he put him out on stage. And had them play, he wanted them to feel the rush of playing live. And so that was important because that's positive feedback. And it was interesting talking to him about studio work because he said one of the things, he says, you've got to play live at some point because you got to get that feedback, feeling the crowd in that joining together where they connect with you. He said that's the problem with studio work sometimes because you're playing to a click track, you're in a room with a couple of producers, like, okay, you know, we're on budget, okay, fine. But basically, you lose that sometimes. There are people that can do that and play with feeling, some of the great session guys, but you'll find them also probably for very little money, they'll go play at a Big Potato. They'll go somewhere else just to play because they need that. And he said that was very important.
Yeah.
And no. I think that's part of that positive reaction that you're talking about. Now, I mentioned in the when I posted up on Facebook about this, mental blocks. which has to do, I think, we're talking about some of that. I know you have to understand this. This is a pretty, especially in the book. I've been reading the book. I haven't done the regular course, but it's very comprehensive. There's a lot of stuff to go through. But I want to kind of just nutshell it a little bit for people that are in a mental block. So those people out there that are in a rut, how, you know, kind of just kind of glance, go over a little bit how to get out of that rut.
Well, I think the thing is, when somebody has a problem, you have to take a close look at it and see what that problem is. So in the case of a mental block, it would be like, I can't play. I'll never play like so-and-so. I'll never do this. And so the first thing you do is you identify what that thing is, and then we take a close look and go, well, why not? What are they come from another planet? Is
this
some
super?
What do you want? Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that you mentioned in the book is instead of saying, you know, well, let's use Scott. I can't play like Steve Vai.
I can't play like Steve Vai. I don't really want to play like Steve Vai. I love that guy, though.
But rather than saying that I can't play like that, you're saying,
what do you
want to play like?
Yeah.
You turn it around to a positive thing.
Okay. Like, yeah.
So, Linda, like what you were saying, if you identify what you don't want, then you can get closer to what you really want. Most people aren't sure exactly what they want.
But if you start writing it down, you'll get closer to what you want, and then you'll know exactly what you don't want.
Yeah.
You don't want to play like Steve Vai.
I mean, I would like to play like him, but it's
okay.
It's not where I naturally go.
No.
But that was something, because as reading through the book and trying to do the exercises myself, it was really hard to answer for myself, what do I really want to do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my first thing was I just want to play, okay? But, like, you know, when you start to get in, like, well, do I want to do that? Do I want to do this? And it's very difficult to just kind of get that focus.
Well, and I think as you start with that questioning, Linda, one thing we find out, a person goes, well, I want to be a rock star. Okay, let's just say that as an example. So I want to be a rock star, and then pretty soon, you know, and I want to play great, and I want to do all that. Well, why? Why do you want to do that? In the end, the reason they wanted to be the rock star, put the money aside, right, and all of that, if there is any money there anymore. But the key is, after a while, having all that adulation, you're the star and all that, was really, I just want to be accepted and loved. And so now we get to the real core. So now if you really loved yourself inside, you wouldn't care if you had that or you didn't have it. You know, so that's what happens is you keep questioning. Then you go, you know, I just want to be happy. I just want to be, you know, so in any case, but this is the core thing, huh, Linda? Because, Linda, let me ask you this, too, for a second. Because Linda teaches the deliberate musician stuff at the college and everything to young people that are like 12, 13 to like 16 years old.
Yeah, kids college at El Camino College.
So what are the children are saying?
Do you see that much negative?
Do you see the negativity,
yes,
too?
Yes, I do. And
even
it's
at that age.
It's from each other. They hear it from home, and they hear it from TV, and they put it on each other. And so my course is, I came up with some animations that makes it fun and easy, little easy things to listen
to. Yeah, there's
a
DVD.
Yeah, they're cartoons.
Yeah,
they're
little cartoons, and they all have messages. And so we go through each one every day. We read from the book, and then we put down, what do you want? You know, like, how do you want your school year to be next year? Mm-hmm. How do you want your friends? And then things come out. You know, well, I don't sit at the popular kids' table because I shop at Target and they shop at Forever 21. I mean, it gets down to little things, you know. I don't have the right color hair or the right color eyes. I don't wear, you know, the right shoes. It's really interesting to see. And then hopefully by the end of my course,
Is it easier to get them to reprogram themselves?
Yeah, it takes
than adults?
Yes. Okay. It takes a little time, but once they feel comfortable, that's the first thing, that because they're from all different schools when they come to the kids' camp in the summertime, and just first getting them comfortable with each other so they'll open up.
Right.
And so that takes a few days to, you know, break the ice, as they say. But at the end, they're all friends, and they're all because every day we do a small topic on what do you want, where do you want to go on vacation? I don't know where I want to go. What don't you want to do on a vacation? You know, do you want to go to the ocean? Do you want to go to the mountains? You know, what do you want? So we just build on that. So it's a building process. But it's really gratifying at the end to see how much they've changed.
Well, for them to open up like that among each other, that's a bond.
It is.
That's a magic thing.
It is. They're friends at the end, and it's really nice to see because they're from all different parts of, you know, different cities.
Yeah. Can you work on them being a little less mean on YouTube?
Exactly.
I'm just kidding.
We do talk about
good.
That.
But
we
half
do.
The time, that's most of the mean comments I get on my YouTube channels are from young kids.
Oh, you're
kidding.
Yeah,
Yeah.
It's quite funny. Yeah. But not really.
No.
Well, you have to turn that into a positive.
Yeah. I do. Actually, you know, I had one on Saturday night at midnight. I got a comment, and the guy's like, I have no idea why anyone would make a video for this very simple thing, was installing strap locks on a guitar.
Oh, that's good.
And the first thing that came to my mind was, it was like, well, why are you watching this video at Saturday at midnight? Like, who's the person here that might have an issue?
Right.
But then I just replied back, thanks for watching the video.
Yeah.
But true. I was just kind of, it was funny. It was like, that makes no sense. You're watching at midnight on Saturday. Right. And you're telling me this is a worthless video.
Yeah. Well, you know, it
seems like it was helpful for you.
And that's why you stay neutral, because he can't affect you.
He can't affect you at all.
Well, at least we can say that he knew that he didn't want to put strap locks on his guitar.
There you go.
Maybe so.
But why do put them on, I'd be asking you questions like, you know, if the leather strap is a little too big and we have that washer,
I
you're
cover
cranking it down.
That's part of
you
my
know.
Part of my thing is
and
to
then
have
how
some
long
wire cutters.
The screw is going to be when we go all the way. No, of course, I'm thinking of it now. God, that's a great topic.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you mentioned in the, I was in the chapter where you talk about the guy setting up the band and the whole process with the band.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've experienced is there's those magic moments.
Yes.
You know, I've played a couple of times where it's just, whether it was a jam or a performance, and it just was right on, and you were totally in sync.
Yeah.
And then there were days that it just didn't happen, and it always felt hit and miss. Now, by doing this, changing all the negativity and reprogramming, is that the technique to get that, so that all of the performances?
It's setting your pre-intentions, and if you can get like-minded people, band members around you, it's even better, you know, because there's always that one guy that can throw everything off. I mean, we saw it at our schools, and the guys would be, three guys would be gelling, and there'd be that one guy that was just outside the zone, and they were just like, how do we get this guy back in the zone, you know? And that happens a lot, and I think that's why a lot of people, you know, break up with their bands.
Well,
and
the drummer, the bass player, so you're talking about.
Well, look, you all know this is when you're young,
never the
right?
guitar
and
player.
That's all, in that book, that's why it's so practical guide, because we're talking about, you know, when you form a band and maybe the drummer's the one with the PA system or the truck, and then they get in the fights, and when you said you have to throw things in, like somebody kicks over the cymbal stand, and then there's a huge fist fight, and you know this. Now, sometimes that negative energy we've seen with big rock bands, it can be synergy, you know, but at other times, if you start focusing when you're going to form a band to look for people that can work together and can play, because that's a nightmare.
My brother and I, when we played, we fought a lot over it.
Oh, did music. You really?
Because I would get bored playing. He liked the old stuff.
Oh.
And I was always buying pedals and stuff, so I would throw a fuzz in here or a flanger in here, and it's like, it's not like the original song. But it was interesting because that dichotomy, that tension, I mean, we weren't yelling and screaming on stage. He would yell at me after, like, what'd you do that for? But it made the group sound different, and it was part of that struggle between the two, is me going way outside and my brother like reeling it back in. It actually worked for, it was part of the dynamic of the group.
Yeah.
But the other guys in the band we knew each other from childhood, so we were friends from before, so it made it was more family.
Yeah, which is,
it's harder. It takes a while for, I think, when you're older and meet people, it's hard to get that type of a thing, because you don't have the, you know,
loyalty,
we grew up together.
Yeah.
We, you know, we had the background.
Right. Right.
Well, and I think what Linda said about intent. So when somebody looks at this book, since all the stories in there are real and been in the music business my whole life, we just start making musicians aware of it. So imagine this. You pick up a guitar and you're out of tune. And you don't know you're out of tune because there wasn't the proliferation of tuners that are everywhere. Some were younger. So one day a guy taps you and dude, look, you're out of tune, man. So finally you go, God, it sounds a lot better in tune. Because my brother-in-law to this day can't tune the guitar. And so what happens is, but you tune into it. Then there's intervals. And when you hear da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you go, oh, he's hitting the six. So the great thing about musicians, they're such good listeners for every little detail and everything that now when you start talking about mental things, now when they hear a negative thing, it'd be like, oh, that's out of tune here. And so musicians are really good at actually making a quick recovery.
Right.
And so, well,
there's a joke there.
but that's the intent.
Now, I've been reading the book, The Deliberate Musician.
Yeah.
You can get it on Amazon. It's in paperback or Kindle. And then you brought this DVD, which is focusing for kids.
Yeah.
But now, real quick, because we're almost out of time,
okay.
I want to talk about the curriculum online and the uniqueness of what you have, because you're doing some really cool things with it, the interaction. So just kind of, and then also too, besides a deliberate musician, you have other courses, right? So just, I know this
well,
is like.
Well, the Skype course, talk about, well, you know, when you do the guitar.
Right.
Well,
I know,
you do it directly online.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, also Les teaches one-on-one with experienced players that are trying to break through that last level.
Right. It's like counseling almost.
He's teaching guitar also, but also lifting them to where they need to go.
Right.
Because they get stuck. They can play really well, but they could go even higher, but they go, I just never made it, but they can still play really well, and they're caught in that thing that's interesting thing. A lot of those musicians, or at least, I would say, at least 80%, hit that like late 40s or 50s, and they went into corporate life. They got a pension now, and they're free, and they're coming back in because we thought about writing a book called Reentry.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what to do. They go, I've got every video, I've got every book. And so, yes, it's all about helping them. When you can do it one-on-one, you can dial it in because we can have conversations, and then we can tune into that. So in answer to that direct part, and then online, what we do is, first on YouTube, we have a lot of videos where we'll have just little topics of thing. What about this? What about that? Thank you. Or, well, here's another thing, too, is younger musicians run into the trouble. Either with their parents or with their girlfriend or something, right? And they go, so, you know, like, here's the parents, you know, and they have a daughter, and now they're dating the musician, right? So the parents sit down, okay, so what school are you going to? You're going to be a lawyer? No, I'm playing guitar. What? You know, so it's the whole thing. So we have a little saying that I have them do, and this is how you can tell. I mean, I'll just show you a quick shift, but what happens, you look the girl in the eye, because when she's going, well, when you're giving up guitar, what's going to happen? So you look her in the eye and you say, do I have to give up me to be loved by you? And if there is a shift, then keep going, you know.
Yeah.
So, but in any case, so all the little videos and stuff, we have things like that where a student or a person that's involved in music might have just that epiphany, one little shift, whether it's Paul Gilbert's Why Not, you know, and so we have those kind of things too that we do.
So you have the besides the deliberate musician, you have other type of courses.
Well, no, we're teaching seminars at we were at USC
and MI.
Oh, okay. So you guys are
a lot of community
like
colleges,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Right, right. So we do that, and in fact, we're going up to Diablo.
Now, what
community
are the
College.
new projects that you're doing now with the affirmations and all of that?
Oh, I'm doing. That's right. I'm doing. Meditations for musicians for how to get over your practice blocks, how to get over stage fright, and my third one is I'm working on right now is procrastination. How to stop?
Oh, I'm going to have to take that one.
Yeah,
I have to take that. I'm a
well. It's going to be an app too on the phone.
Yeah, we're working with a guy that's helping us.
Oh, you
got to
let me know about that. I'll get that app.
It's
some point though, right? You just whenever.
Yeah.
No, that's true. Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding.
That
happens to me a lot. I'll get pulled away something else, and
right.
I'll forget, and I won't practice or won't get to play.
Right. Right.
That is true.
Yeah.
Now, everybody, I want to let everybody know the site to check out is thedeliberatemusician.com. The book, is the DVD on sale like on Amazon?
Yeah.
Is
it? No, it's on our
website.
On the website. So the DVD, but the book is available everywhere. So
yes,
you can get that pretty easily.
Yes.
And one other question. Do you ever get time to play? You're so busy.
Oh, no, I do. I get a chance to play. Not so much. I haven't been playing out in the last year because we're so busy with the choruses and teaching. But, yeah, I practice and
he's practicing all the time. When he's not teaching, he's practicing.
He is playing.
Yeah.
So he's still
–
okay,
it's time
I feel
for
better.
Dinner.
But, you know, when you mentioned the procrastination, too, another thing we have, instead of somebody having to read a book, whether it's Kindle or whatever, we have the audio courses online where they just sit back and listen to all the stories and we program.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
So that way they really, you know, musician can throw it in and drive down the freeway and not have to go through that. So we do that, too. You know, it's a
especially when you're in L.A. on the freeway.
it's a good time.
Plenty of time.
I'm a big fan of audiobooks.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're out of time, and we just touched the surface, but I think we got a good idea of the program, and I just want to thank you guys because this is a really cool thing, and I wish I had known about this like 30 years ago. This would have been, you know, I wouldn't be procrastinating. But, you know, maybe I would have put it off for 30 years. I'm not sure.
But now is the time.
Now is the time. So, no, that's true. Yeah. But I just want to thank you. And obviously, there's more I want to cover on this. We're going to have you guys back.
I'd love
that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing, too, you brought us on the show because I wanted to say to Scott, why not?
Why not? That's absolutely right. You know, I was thinking about when you were saying, listening to your course, the musician driving down the car, I just thought, well, if it's a drummer, he'd be driving his girlfriend's car.
Hey, I play drums too. Watch it. But I can resemble that remark.
Sorry. We definitely want to thank Sweetwater for sponsoring the show. And thank you, Proco Sound, for sending us those cables.
Yes. And thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Well,
thank you, Monique, for introducing me.
Thank you, Monique.
Thank you, Monique.
Good night, everybody. Have a great week.